Welcome to Notes from the Electronic Cottage. I'm Jim Campbell. Folks who read the back pages of newspapers, or the online equivalent, may have come across some interesting recent news about uncertainty in our physical world. One report concerns the Heisenberg uncertainty principle. You may recall that Werner Heisenberg, back in 1927, suggested that when we're talking about subatomic particles like the electron at the level of quantum mechanics, we can never be certain about both the position of a quantum particle and its momentum, or how fast it's moving. Simply put, if we try to measure its position, we'll affect its momentum, and vice versa. In short, the very act of measuring changes the characteristic of what we're measuring. The French Jesuit paleontologist Teilhard de Chardin put a similar idea somewhat more poetically a decade later when he said, quote, "Subject and object marry in the act of knowledge, and man willy-nilly finds his impression on all that he observes," end quote. For 80 years, we generally believed in the uncertainty principle, although we didn't really have any way to be sure why it applied. Today, it seems like we do. A group of researchers from the University of Vienna recently reported in the journal Nature Physics that the uncertainty principle does apply, only not just for the reasons that Heisenberg described. Very interesting, you may say, but what does this have to do with the electronic cottage? Glad you asked. A month or so after this report, we heard of another one, this in the journal Physical Review Letters, and this one had to do with another uncertainty principle, this one called the Fourier Uncertainty Theorem. Without going into a lot of detail, this principle suggests that it's difficult to be accurate about both time and frequency simultaneously. And time and frequency, as you probably know, are essential for perceiving sound, especially musical sounds. If we want to compress music into smaller files, this becomes an issue. The best way we have at present to compress music with maximum effect is to throw out information in the sound stream that we don't think people will miss because they really can't perceive it anyway. This is the principle behind so-called lossy sound compression. When we digitize a stream of sound, a piece of music for example, the size of the original file is very large indeed. In fact, if we use a bit depth of 16 bits when we digitize and sample at 44,100 samples per second, which is about the minimum we can use to get what we refer to as CD quality sound, we'll find that for every minute of stereo music, we're using about 10 megabytes of hard disk space to store that file. A 4-minute song, therefore, takes up about 40 megabytes on a hard disk. Even in the days of gigabyte storage, we still want music files to be small so that we can store a lot of them. And if we're downloading them, even over high-speed connections, we want the files to be as small as possible so they'll download reasonably quickly. To accomplish that, we compress files to make them smaller. But how do we do that? To a great degree, we rely on what we know about how people perceive sound, a study called psychoacoustics. Knowing that human hearing has certain psychoacoustic tendencies, the clever folks on the Moving Picture Expert Group did a lot of research and devised a way to fool our ears by throwing away the information in the sound stream that they think we probably wouldn't pay much attention to anyway. As you can imagine, this is considerably more complicated to actually do than to talk about, but it is the basic principle that underlies the data reduction in the MPEG Layer 3 file, or MP3 file, that we listen to on our computers or portable MP3 players. In fact, the MP3 protocol uses 576 separate frequency bands to analyze sound and then decide what you and I probably won't miss. It turns out that we won't miss a lot of the original signal. In fact, a well-encoded MP3 music file might contain only about 4% of the information in the original music. And a file that's encoding only voice might be as small as 0.5% of the original digital file size. The file size will vary somewhat, of course, depending on the level of sound quality we're willing to accept. But all of this compression is based on some assumptions about the physical basis of sound and what we're likely and unlikely to perceive. And a lot of those assumptions are based upon the implications of the Fourier uncertainty principle. Now we're back to that. In short, researchers behind the paper in Physical Review Letters decided to test whether actual human beings did or did not perceive sounds in the way that the Fourier uncertainty theorem suggests. The short answer is, no, they don't. Humans are much better at distinguishing sounds, particularly the kinds of sounds one would hear in music, than the uncertainty principle suggests. In some cases, humans are a lot better, especially those who happen to be musicians or orchestra conductors. In fact, the researchers concluded, quote, "We have conducted the first direct psychoacoustical test of the Fourier uncertainty principle in human hearing by measuring simultaneous temporal and frequency discrimination. Our data indicate that human subjects often beat the bound prescribed by the uncertainty theorem by factors in excess of 10. End quote. Very interesting, you may say. But so what? Well, we've heard for a long time that many people don't think MP3 or other compressed music files sound as good as the original files they were compressed from. This research suggests that that may be because the compression algorithms we're using are based upon inaccurate physical assumptions about what we humans can and can't really perceive, and therefore what we will or won't miss if some sound information is thrown out of a compressed file. It'll be interesting to see if this research leads to new efforts to provide better sounding compressed music files. If it does, we'll be sure to share the news right here on future editions of Notes from the Electronic Cottage.